The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? People are excited about the subject tonight. Sub was on Discord, and he was saying, is it actually a contradiction within libertarianism principles, or is it a contradiction in something that some libertarians say? Because I see libertarians say all kinds of things. There are people who call themselves communist libertarians, like Vauch. I think it has to do specifically with something Stefan Molyneux said, but it looks as if JF made a continuum fallacy. I also didn't see specific of what Stefan said. I only saw JF's reaction about not being able to draw an exact border around when something that is unpreferable becomes harm. Yeah, I mean, this is what I want to talk about tonight. And I do think it's not just Stefan Molyneux. My critique of libertarianism, although I consider myself a libertarian with some caveats, my critique of libertarianism is more in line with what Hoppe was bringing, which is, ultimately, if you believe that libertarianism as the set of self-consistent, true, and complete principles, you are wrong. And this is, it's not just Stefan, it's the entirety of those who would think that libertarianism is not a pragmatic contract with details, with the devil in the detail kind of stuff that needs to be worked on by assemblies of human beings. If you believe that libertarianism is somewhat true at some abstract level, and you guys says nothing is true and complete, well, exactly. this is the big boundary of moral realism, which is, well, you know, We have much more solid frameworks than ethical frameworks. We have mathematical frameworks. And we know that they're not true and complete. So we know because it's been demonstrated by the Gödel principles that they must be incomplete to some extent. The big problem in libertarianism, the incompleteness is not just a matter of abstraction. The incompleteness is the way you get fucked by libertarianism. And I'll make the case for that tonight. And it's that libertarians will tell you that they have a complete framework for ethics under the NAP, the non-aggression principle. Then they will tell you, well, how do we handle hostile forces to that NAP, well, self-defense. And in that bin, there is something being pushed under the rug here. When you say, oh, well, we have self-defense. Well, the devil is in the detail. And because we are biological creatures, we are occupying niches. Niches that are zero-sum games to an extent. And much of libertarianism is based on the contrary assumption that niches are infinite, that, oh, don't be pissed at the success of the bread maker. You can become a cake maker. But the fact is that there's a limit to these niches, even in a free market, that allows competition. And because of the finitude of niches, ultimately, the existence of others is a threat to your existence. Doesn't matter that they're not committing an act of aggression as you would conceive of it. the existence of others is a threat to your existence. They are dangers, and they can become literal dangers. I like to use examples where it's very clear, like Shaniqua making babies. One third of her babies become murderer. Can she be considered a subject of self-defense? Could you consider, well, you know what, I'm producing children. These children will be killed at a rate of 1 out of 3 from the murderer stemming from Shaniqua's descent. What can I do? How can I indulge Shaniqua in a self-defense perspective? And those people who define the NAP these days, I'm not aware of any libertarian who would tell you you can throw Shaniqua down the stairs and hope that she breaks a neck. Most libertarians these days would tell you you can't do anything about Shaniqua. And only Hobbes really has seen this kind of loophole. And that is why he came with the problem of bad neighbors, which is, yeah, so you have people who are occupying niches. Not only are they taking the niches from you, they are making your niche inviable. They're literally coming with dirty shoes in your ecological niche and making it unviable and saying, fuck your couch. And they put mud all over your couch. So what do we do with this? Well, we acknowledge first that, and this is what I'm missing from Stéphane Moliner and from any of the other libertarians except Hop, which is the recognition that so there's going to be an infinite number of strategies through which libertarianism can be exploited against the libertarian. There's going to be an infinite number of ways to pass above and escape the self-defense of libertarianism if you're subtle enough about it. Because Shaniqua, she knows that 1 out of 3 babies that she produces will be a murderer. So she engages in ecological genocide of a kind that is conscious and intentional. And yet, she knows also that she cannot be reproached because of some assumptions of libertarians and of our modern society around who is guilty and who is not. So we attribute guilt on an individual level, but we've inserted logical assumptions in there that mess with the non-aggression principle. Assumptions such as, well, if your children commit a murder, it's not your fault. If we attribute guilt to one person, that guilt cannot be transferred to causal agents back in the past who were not aware of the plan. I claim that this opens up a massive loophole within libertarian philosophy and within our modern society also, which makes it extremely probable that the bad neighbor problem will actually destroy our civilizations because we can't handle it properly. That our past civilizations were protected against the bad neighbor problems through all sorts of unofficial, unwritten bigotries of all kind that were carried by families and religion, that were carried just by the world moving forward. But by abandoning all of those and by trying to distill it, Western civilization, to an essence, we have principles that in effect are exploitable. And libertarianism is the standing example of this. It's libertarianism is like if you coaching young people into a libertarian philosophy without warning them of these caveats and the problems that, yeah, you know, the 99% of the human species is incapable of signing a contract because it means nothing to them. They will betray you down the line. They will cause actions that are violative of the contract in spirit, but not in terms. They will make babies that become murderer, and they will not give a shit about it. So if you don't approach libertarianism like this with severe caveats and exceptions, you end up promoting a philosophy of exploitability. New Guy Prime says vigilance required. Exactly. Vigilance required. We have to treat libertarianism as a dangerous radioactive material that can be interesting philosophically to study, but that should not be just adhered to and certainly should not be promoted as true. It's a possible contract. It's a possible contract that you can enter in with very special people. And if you don't make it special, if you don't have pre-selection, if you let anyone become part of your libertarian society, you're going to be faced with the exploitability of your self-defense loopholes. Fred Manson says, "Hey, JF, any thoughts on the evolution of the anus? Is it true that it is an open problem, so to speak, in evolutionary biology, how the anus evolved?" It says so in this article in The Atlantic. So I don't know. We'd have to go back to the octopus and the invertebrates and when was the first anus? Do sharks have anus? Do fish have anus? It seems that the goal of the anus is that the shitting moment is a special moment, a restricted moment. Basically, the anus function is not so much to shit, it is to not shit at all moments. And one can guess that there are various reasons why you wouldn't want to be constantly and slowly shitting your intestinal contents out. One of them, the most obvious, the tracing by predators. So there, I solved the anus problem right here live. It was to escape predators in a way that doesn't leave trace. And your entire conception of the anus as serving the function of shitting is absolutely inverted. You've been brainwashed by the mainstream media, by The Atlantic, by the liberals, by the communists. In fact, the function of the anus is not to shit. Okay. It's like I started my YouTube career with the principle of answering all questions, and this leads to exploitability. Just like libertarianism, I may be too open to the contribution of the people on this regular chat. Stéphane Molyneux, it started with a sentence that he stated that shocked me. As, you know, in other circumstances, libertarians like Stéphane, they love to make arguments about contradictions. They will tell you, for example, that the idea that there are no universal truths is contradictory. They will go as follows. They will say, well, if you were to say there are no universal truths, that would be a universal truth. That would be a truth that is universally true, that there are none, that there are absolutely none, and therefore you would contradict. Therefore, there has to be universal truths. And it's those little tricks of the mind that are really exploitation, kind of the exploitation of Gödel's sentences, forms. And I don't think they're particularly true or informative, because the reality is if I say there are no universal truths, obviously I'm not claiming to be a universal being. So I'm not even claiming that I know that there are absolutely no truths that happen to be true everywhere. But as a limited, finite being, what I'm saying really is I don't have any reason to acknowledge the existence of universal truths, and I have no universal verification system that would allow me to even claim that property. What is a universal truth? Is it true everywhere physically? Is it true in all possible universes? Is it true in all possible true verification frameworks? Because then certainly you can build two verification frameworks for truth that are always contradictory. One can literally just say the contrary of the other, and you're going to find that in one true verification system there are truths that will systematically return false in the other one, because the other one is by definition produced to deny the truths of the other. So truth is always local. As a finite being, one can only know truths that are local by definition. They are certainly local to his brain as he conceives of it. And they are also local to verification considerations. So the way we verify truth in mathematics, in like proof standards, is very different from the way we would evaluate the truth in ethics for those people who believes in ethical truth, or the way we would verify an empirical truth about observations in the universe. So truths are local to certain bubbles of disciplines, methods, ways to do, and that is all that a truth is, really. To say, are there any universal truth? First, it lacks the definition of what is universal. And under most definition that I can conceive of, there are no universal truths that I know of as a finite being. And it's not just a limit of my methods and capacity. It's that I can find counterexamples. Give me a universal truth, and I'll give you a world in which it's not true. And basically, that's the game we played, me and Stefan, when I went to his debate. And he gave me a truth that he thought was universal. It was that there were no square circles. And I said, well, I have a world in which it's not true that there are no square circles, taxicab geometry. And people keep mocking me for this. Like, oh, you pulled taxicab geometry. Well, you know, Google it. Taxicab geometry is a thing. And taxicab geometry is a world in which pi is an integer. So it's like, even in that world that I can conceive of, that truth isn't there, isn't true. So that was something that I still stand by, and yet still people think that I fucked up in this debate. People come to me and think, oh, you ridiculed yourself with taxicab geometry. It has nothing to do with morality. Well, it has to do with the universality of principles. Fred Manson says, JF, Indiana has legislated the value of pi. The Indiana Pi Bill. Okay, well, you know, there are truths that apply across Indiana by law, okay? But you get out of Indiana and these truths don't hold. You're following a path, it's a circular path at a certain tangential curvature, and you're on that path, and then suddenly you exit Indiana and poof! You find yourself just rolling on a straight line. Pi value has been legislated in Indiana. Land of the fake, home of the gay, sends $2 on a super chat. He says, 1 + 1 = 2, change my mind. Well, in a true verification system where plus is designated or defined as the vector addition operation in which append is the action rather than sum. 1 + 1 = 1, 1. It's like people are throwing these softballs at me, and I wish they were. I wish it was harder. I wish it was harder, you guys. But there, I just made $2 with a redefinition of the plus. Land of the Fake Home says, no, defined as we know it as. Defined as we know it as, my God. You know, this is you are embracing the subjectivity without me making any argument. You're like, oh no, like within humans. What? Wait a fucking minute. We were talking about universality. We were talking about possible universes. We were talking about alien species. We were talking about universes in which the geometric relationships are not even anywhere commensurate with our own. And now you're like, I mean, humans, like humans of the last 60 years, like humans that are emerged from one third of the world located in Western Europe. That's what I mean. Okay, well, then you have made such a case for the relativity and subjectivity of knowledge that I shall not even answer. New Guy Prime says, why integers in our universe? Why is the number so regularized? Why are numbers so regularized? Well, Ben, they are because they are made that way. I mean, nothing keeps you from having non-integers and jungling with them. But the integers, when you define them as such, they come out with their features. Land of the Fake Home says, you can't say words don't mean what we say they mean just to prove that nothing is real. That is psycho stuff. But I'm not trying to prove that nothing is real. I'm saying that realities are local to subjective agents and relativistic considerations. And everything you spout as a subjective agent just reinforces my truth. You guys are the one with the burden of proof if you think that they are universal truths. But if you're not a universal agent, if you're not a god or someone with omniscience, you don't even qualify as an interlocutor to make the case that there are universal truths to begin with, because you can't even verify your own claim. Daniel Larson Stan sends a super chat. He says, what is your thought on the lack of Apollonian thought on designing a religion based on reaching the stars and instead focusing on the tiered story of dominion of the earth and its pathetic sub-tribes? Of course, everyone has considered the idea of starting a new religion or improving religion or having a complete overdue of our cultural stuff. And Mark Braman is one of those who constantly talks about this. And I don't know how you do this, really. I don't know that it can work. I don't know that you develop culture intentionally. I don't know that you can impose going forward a book or a conception of the world. I am all for the existence of this art, like the movie 300. Here's a movie that incorporates so much of implicit pro-white philosophy that it's good that it exists. But I don't know how you create a religion that will be adhered to by any significant faction. I don't know how you make 300 an obligatory viewing in elementary school. So, The project is unrealizable to me. So that's my comment on it. I don't know that you can intend culture in that way. You produce culture and eventually something gets selected and it gets amplified and there's some social phenomena around it. It's kind of uncontrollable and it's kind of it's a mechanism that depends on how much your cultural products favor lines of descent and favor heterosexuality. So anyways, my exchange with Stefan Moliner started where he said, so we're talking about contradiction. We're talking about contradictions, and he's said something that to me in other contexts would be reviewable as a contradiction. If the libertarians were willing to look at themselves as contradictory beings. He says, I agree that you have responsibility, of course, but morality is what you can shoot people for. Very interesting definition of morality. Morality is what you can shoot people for. I don't even contest the definition. He's kind of right. When we talk about morality, we are inevitably making decisions of life and death by what kind of things are allowable, what kind of things will get you in jail, what kind of things will not get you in jail, and therefore we're making genocidal decisions when we define morals. So that's why it's important to get it right. But I was pointing out to A, is morality both what saves you from being killed and what kills you also? Interesting circular contradiction in the definition of morality. I said violations of the NAP are immoral. Morality is what you can violate the NAP for. Ouch, tough contradiction day for the moral realist. Yes, it would seem that if morality is just a bunch of chit-chat that we're doing in between the moments where we kill each other based on our arbitrary judgment of our levels of danger to each other, then it would seem to me that the moral realist who believe that libertarianism is true, objectively true, and can be imposed onto a society and can lead to non-aggression, it would seem that this is standing on a very weak basis. And it's fun because I think Stefan Moliner got my gist here because he responded exactly where I wanted to go. He said, I'm not sure why the concept of self-defense is alien to you. So he points out to the fact that, you know, there may be an apparent contradiction in the fact that you don't want to kill, but in self-defense, you can and have to kill to preserve your existence. This is exactly what was on my mind. We have a problem with self-defense because it seems all good. Oh, okay, we're going to create a society of liberty. If someone comes and is about to take your liberty away from you or your existence away from you, you have the right to reply, you self-defend, you kill him, you neutralize the threat. It sounds all good until you realize that not all dangers to my life have to be announced. Not all dangers to my life are defendable against. And in fact, most, by definition, the criminals, they will try to not be detectable. They will try to come at you from behind, they will try to hurt you in ways that you can't fight back or you can't defend yourself, etc. So now you have a problem, which is that you live around a bunch of people who are stochastic threats to your existence. You have no way, you have actually ways of quantifying that probability. You have no way to be sure, though. But you do know, for instance, you do know racial statistics, and you do know that every single black male that is born one out of three will get in serious felony level trouble, criminal trouble, and close to one out of three will become murderers. Marby Dog says, can you preemptively self-defend? Israel says, yes. Exactly. Now you enter the actual problem. If libertarianism wanted to be relevant to our world, it would have to address these problems, but it is precisely on these questions that it leaves the loopholes, completely empty, completely unanswered. It's exactly on those problems that matter today. So libertarianism is kind of, by definition, trying to get out of the real world and get out of relevance. So I answered to Stefan Moliner. It is not alien, the concept of self-defense. I know about it. But there's the issue. At what point am I justified in self-defense? When Shaniqua makes one-third babies a murderer? One out of three of her babies a murderer? When she makes two out of three babies a murderer? When she makes three out of three babies, taking the job at the McDonald's that I could have had, thus restricting my income? Or when she points a gun to my head, or when she pulls the trigger. The fact here is that self-defense is not complete as a concept, and as such, it is insufficient to affirm the self-consistency and possibility of libertarianism. Libertarianism assumes that guilt and causal routes of liberty deprivation are isolated by individual. If a child grows into an adult and that adult commits a murder, libertarianism has kind of this obfuscation where the guilt will all be drained by the adult individual that committed the murder. Suddenly, the causal route to this murder, including all of the actions of the ancestors of the murderer, they don't matter anymore. But they physically matter, and they ecologically and biologically matter. This is why I'm saying there is here a loophole, a severe flaw in the way people conceive of libertarianism that opens it to exploitation. And the exploitation is quite simple. What if it was your biological specialty to be an invasive, disruptive species of annoyance? What if your specialty biologically, your genes, literally, are making you the most annoying human to live around? But you don't break any laws. You always act through proxies to annoy. What if you're a special queen? A queen, imagine a species of insects, and that queen, let's call it the Shaniqua queen of the jungle, is producing extra babies. Where most insects would produce 5 or 6 eggs, she produces 500. And those babies, some of them are not even viable. They won't make it to reproductive age before getting in jail. But she sends those babies on biological purpose, as a biological strategies, just to annoy the other insects, just to make their life unlivable, and in fact to murder the other insects. And then, one of our babies gets caught murdering the other insect, goes to jail, gets judged mentally incompetent, is sent back into the jungle 10 years later. Out of the psychiatric hospital, no medication. If you have this biological strategy is facing you, you better have a response to it as a libertarian. If you want to be a credible leader of establishing a libertarian society, you better have a response to parasitism of that sort. Sarah Chunk says, but yeah, I get it. JF is making the argument that if the entire subspecies is genetically predisposed to violent parasitism, then yes, you have the right to defensive violence to prevent it. Well, you say that, and I would concur that you have to. But the current libertarians are telling you no. You cannot attack the queen for the action of her babies. And that leads to a problem, which is libertarian societies, as it is conceived by modern libertarians, almost all of them, is exploitable through parasitism. And we're not even here talking about the other dangers, where I highlighted the worst of it, which is genocidal violence, basically. And if you look at the numbers, yes, blacks are killing whites at a higher rate than whites are killing blacks. Down the line, what does this math says? This math says there is a future in which there are places where there are only black people. As long as this math goes on, we are in a derivative function, the end of which is zero white people. Now, that's just murder. The reality is you have mechanism of parasitism that are playing out in human civilization that are much more extensive and much more common than murder, and that actually ensure to push out white people of certain places. You've seen it recently in the last 10 to 20 years, with the whole idea of DEI and diversity employment practices, which basically hire anyone but a white heterosexual male. So what do we do with this? What is the self-defense prescription of libertarianism when a bunch of free corporations decide to exclude you ecologically, to make your life unlivable? Those are the current questions that I would like the libertarians to answer, but we never get these answers. We get discussions on principle that are so remote from actual society, so as to say that libertarian is a useless philosophy for interacting with reality. Coronal Mass Ejection says, but they still have to have a real human doing the work for them. Okay, absolutely. So I finished my opposition to Stefan by saying, where self-defense lies, as shown by Hopper, relies on arbitrary preferences as to the bad neighbor problem. Because ultimately, down the line, it's okay. The house beside you has been bought. It's been bought on the free market. When are you going to address the problem that your new neighbors are more dangerous than your past neighbors, and that therefore you were deprived of some degree of property and valuation on your own home? Because now you live close to a family that instead of having one chance out of 100 to produce a murderer, they have one chance out of 3. Now that's a big difference, you know, because when you see the kids churn out of the house beside you, and you're like, I have 1% chance that maybe they will murder my daughter, it's very different from I have 33% chance that they will maybe murder my daughter. Those are unaccounted for results of parasitism that Hans Hermann Hoppe has tried to bring to the attention of people, but that is not being discussed by many who identify as libertarian these days. I mean, these days, people who identify as libertarians, there's more leftists. It's unbelievable. There's more leftists that identify as libertarian these days, but... So in a way, the label has been soiled. The label has been soiled. Sir Chunks says, imagine holding a sheet of paper liable for the actions of people. Unnatural and complete bullshit. Sir Chung says, oh, it's higher than that. I worked in the ghetto for years. Graveyard shift. They all would kill you for the change in your cup holder, but back down if you're big and armed. Okay, well, sorry you had to work in the ghetto. So yes, this is what I had to say about libertarianism for tonight. We can do the round of the smaller news. DOJ staffer claims she was fired over husband's controversial anti-ICE app that warns users when feds are nearby. Okay, so she was an employee of the DOJ, but she had a husband that was an Antifa kind of leaker of ICE locations. Should you be judged for your spouse's actions? No. But at the same, and it kind of touches back on the loophole. It's like, when do you fight back against this parasitism? Because most likely she agrees with her husband. Most likely she would be hand in hand leaking info with him if she could. Most likely she is getting paid by the government to basically be an anti-ICE, anti-Trump agent. So just get rid of her. And at some point, you just have to decide injustice. And this is very much in line with what we see from this guy. See, this new generation is very much aware of the problems that I've been highlighting in this stream. Because they're not just problems of libertarianism. They are problems of liberalism and of modern society. Now, this guy is rising as a star because he went on the Jubilee. And he basically says, yes, I'm a fascist. And the guy was, oh, so you seem like you would identify maybe as a fascist. And he's like, yeah, I'm just a fascist. Because at this point, you have to acknowledge that we are faced with such parasitism coming from all directions. Liars, exploiters, corrupt politicians, people who are not honorable. That you can't deal with this in contractual ways. At some point you have to say no to all of you. Go fucking die on the street. I don't give a shit. Call me a fascist. It doesn't even harm me anymore. Land of the fake, home of the gay, has sent two super chats. He says, would Stefan accept my argument that fat people should be held responsible for assaulting my eyes? I mean, it's an interesting argument. I love this argument. To which extent is is the display of ourselves an insult to the eyes of others? Because, as it turns out, in our society, the assumption is that, yes, like, if you go naked in a store, they will kick you out, and maybe even in some places you will get charged for public indecency. So you are basically feeding of information to other people's eye is part of your responsibility. You cannot be a satellite leaking all that too much information on your body. So as such, there are some burdens and duties put onto people to be publicly clothed. And it is kind of a blame the victim assumption, kind of, where it's like, well, someone should be free in principle to walk naked around. You are responsible for where your eyes are looking at. So if you don't like the sight, you can look away. So you have basically a flight mechanism, an escape mechanism. You're not forced to see it, but we consider it so shocking and so unwelcomed, the vision of naked people, that we say even a flash, even being shown for 1 second a naked body that you didn't want to see, is kind of an aggression, an assault on your eyes. So by these standards, you could have an extension of what we do to clothes. We could do it to fat. We could say, Well, naked bodies are something that you should not display. We don't want to see it. We also don't want to see fat people. you could say this. I think that they are already, you know, stepping over the boundaries. When we have a duty to wear clothes, we're already kind of entering fascism in a way. But exactly like this guy is making the point, we have to. So it's like, at some point, we're going to have to start theoretically trying to justify everything. And we're going to have to realize that effective well-living, effective quality of life demands fascism. So yes, okay, I'm a fascist because I'm forcing people to wear clothes. Fuck it, I'm doing it. And it's kind of the attitude of this generation right here.
Quite frankly, if Trump is anti-constitution, good. And I think he should go further.
So this is wonderfully revealing of the modern conservative mindset. So I appreciate you spelling it out so openly. Just checking, do you support the Second Amendment?
I do.
Okay, surprise, I was shocked to hear that. I'm saying that Donald Trump is defying the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the 14th Amendment. He's thinking of defying the 12th and 22nd Amendments. Mm. You're saying you don't care about the Constitution, but actually you do because you quite like the Second Amendment. You just don't like the bits that you disagree with. Can I just be clear on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm more than willing to amend it and include the
Whenever it's
Second
in your
Amendment.
Favor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So can Democrats do the same when they're in office?
No, absolutely not. Because
so you don't
it's
believe
the friend
in democracy?
Enemy. No, I don't. Absolutely not.
What do you believe in?
Autocracy.
A little bit more than a far-right Republican.
Hey, what can I say?
I think you can say I'm a fascist.
Yeah, I am. Absolutely.
I'm just checking who's clapping.
Interestingly, he's getting clapping in a room that is, you know, not extremist alt-right, but if I understand correctly, they've been designated as far-right Republicans, so... Further right than Donald Trump. It's interesting what's happening with this generation because they kind of know in advance. They know that it's not sustainable. So it doesn't matter what you can derive from first principles and abstract clouds of interrelated principles, because these principles, if you refuse to filter them through the filter of reality, you might as well say that they are irrelevant to reality. If they can't interact with the Shaniqua problem, the problem of bad neighbors, they don't mean anything because they can't solve my situation right now. They can't address the problem of society as it stands. Now, this guy who we just saw has lost. So I'm going to ban Rob Jones forever. There you go. You said your last little trolling tweet. Fascism is in. You are now banned forever because you've been trying to annoy me with these sex questions. And I've signaled to you many times, shut the fuck up. But now you're trying to spam your reattempt at this irrelevant sexual position that you have an obsession about. I will ban you every time you bring it up. I will never get tired. I will never stop. You'll be dead of cancer by the time I'm still clicking to block your future accounts, which you plan to come and annoy me with. I'm done with parasitism. The age of fascism is starting now. We've raised a whole new generation that are ready to self-cancel. This guy is now on Give, Send, Go. He had a goal of $15,000 because he said he was a fascist on this show, on this Jubilee, and it led him to lose his job. Apparently, he kind of had a feeling that he was getting more and more open about his political beliefs, so he knew that it was coming. So he made a Give, Send, Go to raise money. He made a goal of $15,000. And in fact, he's now at $27,000. Twice the initial goal. I think it's good. I'm not going to send him money personally. But I think it's good that he's getting more money than he asked. because we have to create paths for self-cancellation like this for thinkers who need to get started and who are paying high prices, like they're losing their job to come out truthfully. So it's good that he's making money. Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, has died at the age of 76. What a weird guy. I don't know what to think about him. I don't know.
One thing more. Donald Trump is a felon, right?
Mm-hmm.
A felon, correct me if I'm wrong, can't own a gun.
No.
But if he gets in, he can't own a gun, but he could start World War III on his own.
All right, so there he was making arguments against Donald Trump. I don't have a strong opinion. He's kind of a mainstream music producer that exploited some form of Halloween-like aesthetics. He's part of a branch of metal or rock music that I've never really respected. I do respect Metallica. I do respect the highly harmonic solo guitar of metal. But Ozzy Osbourne, I don't know of any song that he's done that is worth remembering. Greatest Whitest says, I know what to think about him. At least he can now chill with the demons he's obsessed about. Yeah, lots of demonic and Halloween type imagery. Yeah. Take note, brothers. This woman is married too, but you will not see any woman shaming her for cheating. They will only hate Andy for the same crime and want her wife to walk out with alimony cash. Not a single word for Christine's husband. Remember that. Uh-huh. Very interesting, this dichotomy, asymmetry of the reaction to male infidelity. It's always the fault of the male. Land of the Fake Home says, Metallica, they narked on Napster. Okay. I don't blame them. I mean, I'm not super against piracy, but I understand that a group of music would be against piracy. I mean, in the end, we got infinite piracy. This is fascinating. Piracy won. Because these days, piracy has totally destroyed the film industry, the pop music industries of the 90s. Now, there are pros and cons. We have lost quality. I'm looking at the movies that are getting released. It's so low quality. I watched a movie 2 days ago about a giant tentacle that shows up on Earth and it teleports. And we are following the tragedy of a kind of old woman and a Chinese guy as they get teleported accidentally by the spike mechanism of this tentacle, and as they suffer from trauma and anxiety crisis. It's like all these new movies from the new generation, they always have psychological troubles. And I was a big fan of Terminator too, because Terminator has no dysfunction. He can have his whole arm ripped off, he's gonna just continue. But the modern movies, they're like, oh no, I have an anxiety crisis. Like, are you serious? An anxiety crisis is in your script as an event? What the fuck am I looking at? Dysfunctional beings being teleported across the U.S. And she's a beekeeper. You want to know what the movie was? What's the movie? We're All Gonna Die. I mean, this is like a 2-star out of 10 movie. This is the kind of movie you watch because it's bad. Let me pull the IMDb page here. Ugh. We're All Gonna Die. 5.8 out of 10. In the near future, everyone's gotten used to the 10,000-mile alien tentacle that materialized in the sky, and a struggling beekeeper and a grieving wanderer must join together and take a dangerous road trip to get to their teleported stuff back. And eventually they enter the spike, the tentacle. But it's like the tentacle is mirroring your internal anxieties. So it's like, oh no, I'm now seeing the trauma of the loss of my husband 10 years ago. And it's... New script writers, they have a problem where they want to link the psychology. They're way too psychological. They're so fascinated about psychology. It's like they're coming out of these departments at the university that obsess about psychology. A distraught mom says that her son, 14, shot himself dead 10 days after he began talking to strangers on TikTok. So this is a very sad case. A young boy, he starts interacting on TikTok and somehow he got scammed into sending nudes of himself. And now it wasn't to a girl, it was to some sextortion specialist. And now the guy is threatening him, well, I'm going to use the pics that I have of you naked. I'm going to publish them. And within 10 days of these interactions, he suicides himself, being desperate at the idea that he has committed a mistake in sending nudes of himself. It's so sad because in his mind, it was probably so grave. But in reality, like, what's going to be the reach of a nude picture sent by a boy? It's not gonna, it's, you can go on in life, bro, and life, it wasn't worth messing your life over this, because the fact is no one would have cared seeing your nudes. Your nudes don't matter, and you've committed an error. Jan Rushdie says, join the Inquisition with me and JF. Yes, we're doing a show every 2 weeks with Jan Rushdie in French. Jan has a vision of having baronies, and we're going to build corporations that are withdrawn from the obligations of law. Of course, legally they will respect the law, but they will be in they will set local principles of living that are beyond what the law demands, and that put more obligations onto people. And in these baronies, me and Jan will be breeding women. I hope Jan that you do find a woman, because it's okay to work on your internet success, and I'm willing to help by being there on the show with you every 2 weeks. But it's important that you find a reproductive unit to start making babies. Because none of what you do in life matters if you don't have children. That is it. What do we have? We have someone claiming that Trump's hands were on my breast, buttocks moving. Stacey Williams comes out complaining that she was in a room with Jeff Epstein, and Trump came in and he started sexually assaulting her, touching her against her consent. She froze, she says. So, I mean, it's always like, okay, so you've not said no. So you froze. So you did nothing. And then eventually when you said no, he stopped.